From Northeast Public Radio, this is The Media Project, a weekly discussion about issues confronting the media.
Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score. Killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They wallow in corruption, crime and gore. Ting-a-ling-ling, city desk, pull the press, extra, extra, read all about it, it's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the press.
Here we are on The Media Project, a half hour of commentary and analysis and sometimes some insight when we're on our best game
into the media issues of the week.
Al is not ready for insight. Just expect commentary. I'm Rex Smith, editor of the Times Union. There's Alan Shartok, the CEO of Northeast Public Radio. There's Ira Fussfeld, the publisher emeritus of the Daily Freeman and Associated Publications
Hello,
down in Kingston,
nice,
New York.
Nice
sir.
To see you.
And Judy Patrick, formerly editor of the Gazette in Schenectady and now with the New York Press Association.
Gay man.
Yay, man. Yeah, man.
There you go.
So we have a lot to talk about here. By the way, before we get started, there's a public service announcement from a retired school librarian and a public library trustee. Thank you, Pauline, because we invite our readers to read in. And she pointed out that after the debate that she had just seen between the 19th congressional district candidates, there was a short discussion concerning the difficulty in separating fact from fiction. And she hopes that we'll remind all of our listeners that real research consists of more than a 5-minute Google search, and that their school and public libraries can help them find a plethora of valid and appropriate sources. In fact, if more schools had full-time librarians who are given the time to partner and coordinate with teachers starting an elementary school, we could be educating everyone with true research skills in all forms of media. In these difficult times, it is more important than ever to make sure that libraries and librarians are supported in our town and school budgets.
To which I say, bravo!
Bravo, indeed. You know, we talk a lot on this show about people not having the analytical skills that good reading of the media, that an educated readership might give them. This is a potential solution here. Anyway, we have to talk today about some of the issues that have come to light at the time of our taping involving the bombs that have been sent around the country, because there are media issues involved in this. As we are speaking, we don't have a suspect in custody. There is a lot of investigation going on, but we have had bombs that have shown up in different places targeting Democratic political leaders, and one that went to CNN. The question being, is this an attack on the media or is it not that CNN bomb? And what do we think about the coverage in general?
Well, one of the things that I thought was so interesting on the CNN thing was we know that Trump himself, the president, has been basically agreeing with the chant at all of his rallies, which is that CNN, I believe it's CNN sucks, isn't
mm-hmm.
that right?
That's what they say.
Yeah, and they do it by the thousands. And so now when CNN gets it, you have the president in his hypocritical might standing up and saying, we have to be nicer to each other, when he's been leading these chants and talking about the press as the enemy of the people and setting up the stage. And each of the people who got a bomb, by the way, has been called out by this particular president. Now, what's interesting about this is that right afterwards, you now got people like me saying, see, look, a president leads this kind of thing. You get what you deserve. He's the one who set the whole thing up. And now he's trying to mitigate it by saying we have to be nicer to each other. But on the other hand, Hannity and Limbaugh and all these other guys are going in saying it's the Democrats who did it in order to get sympathy for themselves. So you see the divide even extending into the press in which this kind of nonsense gets said.
Right. That's a technique called false flag.
I like it.
And it went crazy on Twitter yesterday. We're forced to really speculate at this point because we don't know a lot about whether this was someone who was mentally unstable, just acting, and who else may receive one of these suspicious packages. But it is interesting, as Ira noted earlier, that it went to John Brennan at CNN, who doesn't work for CNN, but it didn't go to Jim Acosta, who is a frequent target of the president's attacks. So at this point, we're not seeing a direct assault on the media, just on high-profile Democrats.
Right, although and what Judy's alluding to is before we went on the air, I was saying I heard an interview with Michael Balboni, a former New York State official, who surmised that CNN was not the target, that John Brennan was, because that's who the bomb was addressed to. And Brennan doesn't even work for CNN. And his name was misspelled on the envelope, which may speak to the intelligence level of the so-called bomber. But let me play devil's advocate. I'll state
Why don't you just play the devil?
I can do that. Some people may think I am after what I'm going to do. But we all will agree, I believe, at this table, that Trump has raised the temperature in this country to such a fever pitch that it would not surprise any of us if they arrest somebody who says he or she was inspired by Trump. The question I have is, to what extent, since this is a media show, does the media's coverage, does the media's commentary, which is often overheated, the cable news panels, quote unquote, and where they spend time fighting with each other, also raising the temperature, to what extent is the media also responsible for what's going on?
Well, I'm not one to defend the programming of cable news. I really don't think that that's appropriate. But I do think that the responsibility rests more heavily on the shoulders of, frankly, of the White House. As Jeff Zucker, the president of CNN, said, the president, especially the White House press secretary, should understand that their words matter. Thus far, they've shown no comprehension of that. You know, we have those kind of attacks which we have to cover. I don't think that we can just say, well, we shouldn't be covering what the president says. That would be giving this president a pass that no other public official has. We've learned that he has just denigrated the nature of conversation in this country, and yet we kind of have to cover it, don't we, because he's the president?
Damn, I hate it when I agree with Rex. But there's no question, we get mail here every day saying, it's enough with Trump. Stop putting Trump in your headlines. Stop putting Trump on your radio station. What are we supposed to do? Here's the leader of the free world. He makes an utterance, and it's ridiculous, but we have to cover it, don't we?
Yes, you could change your programming so that maybe that what those people are saying is they're tired of political programming, and they'd rather that on the roundtable you talk about arts and leisure, travel.
Yeah, okay, I'm sorry, yeah. But I have to defend myself against this.
No, I'm
wicked,
saying that
wicked,
could be what they're
wicked,
saying.
That's what Rex always does. He always says, that's what they say, or that's what other people say, or some people say. But it's your personal attack. You know it is.
No, I'm saying this person is saying, why do we always have to talk about Trump? But you do. You talk about Trump all the time.
We do. And because, right. And let me just explain something to you, Rex, for whatever it's worth. That program that
He's
we do that,
explain that
it's gonna be, it's popular. He's gonna say it's popular.
That we did. That's right.
Well, there you go. Then it must be the
right
thing to do.
Right. That's right. It is our
so
most
is Rush
popular.
Limbaugh.
It's our most popular program because and people really listen to it. More people or as many people listen to it as listen to Morning Edition from NPR. Isn't that incredible?
It's amazing. It's wonderful. And imagine what would happen if you broadened your audience by bringing in the right as well.
Yeah, and you'd imagine what would happen. Never mind. I'm not going
but,
there.
But let me go back, because I'm not talking about not covering Trump, although that's something we have talked about from time to time. I'm just wondering whether the rhetoric on some of these cable shows, on some of these op-ed pieces in the New York Times and in the New York Post are adding to this climate. I mean, I hope the hell we don't have a civil war in this country. I believe it's already been stated by many that we're in a cold civil war. But, you know, when you start talking about violence, we're in a whole other new ballgame, and the kind of rhetoric that we're hearing from the White House and from some in the media could ignite that.
Well, wait a second now. We're in the media.
Yes.
Are you hearing that? Are you hearing it from the New York Times?
Yes.
Or you are not?
Sure. You're hearing it not in the news pages.
Not violence.
No, no. They're not advocating violence, nor is the right advocating violence.
Oh, but, I don't know. When you hear Donald Trump say, as they're leading a protester out, beat him up, that's violence.
That is true. But this is a media show, so I'm trying to zero in on what, if any, of the media responsibility
Okay, well,
is.
I'd like to hear that.
Yeah, well, so you've got the Hannitys and Limbaughs of the world who are distorting or igniting on the far right.
Okay, that's the Trump people.
And then you have people on the left.
Name one.
Frank Bruni, Charles Blow.
No, they don't. They're not raising this to the point of violence.
Well, I think that they're very provocative. I happen to like them both. I'm trying to play devil's advocate here because we do want to discuss media issues. And all I'm saying is Trump clearly is the primary instigator in chief of the atmosphere that we have in this country right
now. That's right.
And so the question is, to what extent, if any, and maybe the panel here will say no, the answer is none, to what extent, if any, is the media also responsible for lighting the flames that are creating the tensions we have in the country right
now? So how is this different? I'm speculating one person has sent all these packages. How is this different from the attacks on Ronald Reagan or on the congressman playing softball? The softball attack was a Bernie Sanders supporter, right? But do we blame Bernie Sanders for this? I think it is different because it's true that President Trump is out there, and he's definitely not discouraging people from being angry, and he paints leading Democrats as stupid and worthy of attack.
So let's just take a look at what happened here. The president goes to one of his rallies in Wisconsin. He says, "I'm being very good, aren't I?" And he's reading off the teleprompter for once instead of being, you know, nutty. Mm-hmm. But what happens afterwards? He does interject, and he said, "You know, this is terrible, and I decry it, but the press has a role in making this."
Yeah, the media has to behave. They got to stop the terrible attacks on me, you know? And he goes along in the same way. And, you know, when you talk about the responsibility of the media, I think it really depends on what you define as media. There's a really provocative and interesting piece in Vox, the online platform, written by Matt Iglesias, who puts forward the notion that there is a gap between what the right wing is able to do on the media and what the left, because there is no infrastructure for the left the way there is for the right. We in journalism have certain standards that are not accepted by Rush Limbaugh, and that ilk dominates right-wing radio. There is Sinclair, which is buying up more and more TV stations, the largest broadcaster in the United States. And when Sinclair buys a station, as they have the CBS affiliate in Albany, WRGB, when they buy a station, they increasingly require segments to be run on national politics, which are produced by their national center, which are right-wing oriented. They cut down the amount of local news so that they have more space for commentary favoring Donald Trump and his ilk. And so Sinclair is doing this all over the country, including in this market. And that kind of thing is not done on the other side. And the American media, the reporters in most newsrooms, which are truthfully more on the progressive side than on the right wing, but they have journalistic standards that don't allow them to have this propaganda machine going on. Journalism is not propaganda. The propaganda apparatus is Sinclair Broadcasting and Fox News, both of them created by non-journalists, by the way.
But aren't they bought and paid, Rexy, aren't they bought and paid for? In other words, aren't these guys, I'm sorry to say this word because it'll just heat things up, aren't they prostitutes? In other words, they're bought and paid for, and they do, you know, and if one of them dropped out, you'd have to buy another one. That's all there is to it.
Yeah. The difficulty is that it inflates certain stories that don't deserve inflation. The Hillary Clinton email controversy is the best example.
Sure.
You know, actually, there was nothing more serious there by comparison to what is going on right now in the White House. You know, the president is using an unprotected iPhone, and he is being tapped by foreign governments.
Yes, he says that's fake news.
It is not fake news. Yeah. It is happening, and it is a lot more serious than Hillary Clinton with her emails, which she admitted was a problem. But it wasn't a serious matter, and there were congressional hearings, and there was
lock her up.
Absolutely, and there is just not an echo chamber for the left the way that there is the propaganda machine of the right in this
country. Well, the right would say CNN is an echo chamber, MSNBC is an echo chamber, and there are all sorts of commentators and online sites. I'm not saying I agree with it, but I'm just raising that as the counter argument.
But here's an example. When Hillary Clinton said that she was telling her supporters, remember the basket of deplorables quote?
Yeah.
What she actually said was that she was trying to reach the other half of the right wing. She said, you know, you can put half of Trump's supporters into what she calls the basket of deplorables, that we're never going to get them. But she was trying to encourage her supporters to reach out to the other half of them. And of course, that was blown up that Hillary Clinton considers all Republicans to be a basket of deplorables. Donald Trump says anybody who votes for a Democrat now is crazy. So is crazy a worse thing to say about half the American electorate than deplorables being a reference to people that you can't reach, but reach out to everybody else?
I fear you doth protest too much. And here's what my problem is, Rex. She shouldn't have said it.
You're right. Politically, it's unwise. But substantively, what the president says is a lot worse than that every day.
Absolutely.
And yet it doesn't get the same kind of attention. People just kind of accept it. And of course, it's because we have journalistic standards. Here's an example of bad journalistic standards. Fox News, at a time when all the other networks were reporting about these pipe bombs, instead had the Republican candidate for governor of Florida on denouncing his Democratic opponent. You know, looking at politics, ignoring the pipe bombs, because that's an issue that is provocative, that it would be upsetting to the Fox News listeners. And so they're getting less of that.
And because the Democrat is leading in the race.
Right.
And so the followers, who, as I described before, may be journalistic prostitutes, know what they have to do.
Yeah.
You know, I've thought that we need a whole rethinking about how we do journalism in the age of Trump, because we're following the rules and he's not following the rules. I watch Twitter and I think nobody I really know as a real person actually reads Twitter. They find out what the president says on Trump because the mass media mass reports it. And even though I think we need to report what he says on Twitter, I think the breathless leads about his tweets or when he says something wrong. All of us, if we were in a newsroom and we had a source that was repeatedly saying false things, at one point we would say, you know, we're not going to listen to him as much. We're not going to give him the credence. I understand he's the president of the United States and you have to give him some credence. But if he was a regular source or a regular politician, you would really downplay what he
would say.
That's
absolutely true. You would. You would basically say, yeah, that's just that crazy guy. We get an email every day from a guy who's a former Albany High School principal. Every day he writes to us. And we just basically say, yeah. Just throw it off to the side. He doesn't have anything to say.
I get a postcard like that every single day from a guy.
Really?
Every day or every other day.
Well, the post office must be very
happy
with
guy.
Well, some of the mail we get in the roundtable panel, I see it. I'm on the mailing list. I see it all. And there are several people who write every day whose comments never get on the air, and rightly so, but they keep writing. I don't know who they think is looking
but
at
how
this.
Do we change journalistic standards? To Judy's point, how do you do that if you're wacko, the unreliable source is the president of the United States?
Right, but something needs to be done.
Take a look every day at the two major tabloids in New York City. The Daily News, which hates Trump with a passion that has no competitors. And every headline is denigrates Trump, I think, quite properly. And the New York Post, which is on the other side of the table and who, you know, just defends him no matter what the rationale is. There's no way to change that, is there, Rex?
The tabloids are always just a case. I mean, they're just a little bit of an exception.
But they have, you could say that from where you sit. It's very comfortable for you. You run a very respectable newspaper. But those guys, they have, you know, hundreds of thousands of readers. So it's got to be journalism.
Well, sure, yeah, it's journalism. What was the question?
The question, well, the I don't know.
You know, he meaning Trump, has succeeded in systemically changing the way half of the country views the media and has a worldview, so much so that when Trump leaves office in however amount of time and no matter what the circumstances of him leaving office, the residue is going to be remaining behind, and it's going to I believe it's going to take a generation at least, if there's no counterbalancing force, to get us back on an even keel where people believe what it is being reported in the mainstream press. The only other thing that I think that could change that short term, and I hate to predict it or say it, is some sort of major disaster, whether it's a terrorist attack of large scale proportions or five major hurricanes at the same time, where the country all sits around the fireplace metaphorically and turns on their favorite media outlet to learn factually what is going on.
No, but Ira, you're right. You know, here's this guy. He comes from The Apprentice. He comes from television. He takes what he knows about how to turn on a lot of people, including some, not all, who are uneducated and who are in that basket that Hillary was talking about before. And I don't think that's ever going to change now. In other words, that worldview, that approach is now something we have. And anybody who comes on from now on, I was watching Joe Biden the other night. And Joe Biden was employing a lot of the tactics in terms of his appealing to that crowd there that you would see from a Donald Trump.
You know, but the Apprentice ratings eventually tanked, so I think eventually it'll go away.
My
point is that I think journalism is respected at the local level, and so I have hope that at the local radio stations, local TV stations, local reporters working for newspapers, their readers do trust them.
What makes you say that?
Sure, you get some criticism from some of your readers or listeners, but anytime
newspapers.
Anytime, but there is, I think the locals do respect, they appreciate what you do. I think you
the
do
local
get,
reporting, the yes. stuff that the watchdog reporting.
I wish
you,
I could be as confident in that. I look at the responses on Facebook to stories that my newspaper prints, and it's vile often. It's right out of the Trump playbook often. It's fake news in caps often.
Even when it's your local
news
they're reporting about?
Absolutely. Mm. Well, I mean, I don't want to speak for the Times Union and the Schenectady Gazette, and maybe this reflects negatively on my old newspaper. But as long as I was at the Daily Freeman, going back 45 years, we heard from the community, nobody would buy that paper if it wasn't for the comics, the police beat, and the obits.
And something
nobody
wrap,
likes that
and
paper.
And something to wrap fish with.
Yeah, that was we had a radio guy in town who used to call us the Shad Rapper. That was his nickname. Never mentioned the name of the paper. We were the Shad Rapper.
And then so, there was no more Shad, and then he couldn't have
it. Yeah,
and then
clever
he, and
title,
he died prematurely. What a shame.
wish him no ill.
Maybe you've not heard this line before. I've always grown up with the line that says nobody likes their local newspaper. I can recall our newspaper going into the market that the Poughkeepsie Journal was serving and hearing from readers there saying, boy, we're glad you're here.
Oh, yeah.
We hate the Poughkeepsie Journal. And then we would have vice versa. Another newspaper, either Middletown or Poughkeepsie, would come into our market. Boy, I'm glad to see there's another paper in town because we hate you. So nobody loves their local newspaper.
Yeah, there's some of that. By the way, if you wish to write to us, media@wamc.org, Alan Chartok, Ira Fussfeld, who is that just speaking, Judy Patrick, and I'm Rex Smith. Here's a listener who asks a professor, actually, Dr. Chartok, one like you, who
Nobody's
says,
like me.
Thanks for an insightful show every week. He's concerned that the words falsehoods, untruths, misleading statements, inaccurate statements, and so on. He says, why doesn't the media just use the term lie when he lies?
I do. Always have, and I've been severely criticized for it.
We've been discussing that here long before Trump. It's just a word that the press has just avoided using because there could be some nuance to it.
Well,
but I think we're all using it more now.
I heard one this morning, as we speak, on NPR. They had an outside reporter coming in, and it was talking about the Saudi Arabian misdeed, the great misdeed. And the reporter, I think from an English paper, a British paper, called it a murder. And the NPR host corrected him and said, we're saying...
Yeah, we don't say murder.
We don't say murder. We say
he might have had his fingers cut off and be sliced up as a result of a fist fight. Yes.
Unbelievable.
It could have been an accident. You know, there is the question, of course, about the intent to deceive. But this professor suggests when the president says that the left is giving a lot of money to the Central Americans in this cavalcade supposedly coming up, we know that's not true.
Right. It's a lie.
So it's a lie.
It's a purposeful lie.
The question beyond the media issue is he has so many demonstrated lies every day of the week, multiple times a day, and yet people are still supporting them. This is not somebody saying, read my lips, no new taxes. This is somebody saying tomorrow is Friday when we know tomorrow is Saturday. And yet they let that lie sit out there.
There you go. Ira Fussfeld, Alan Chartok, Judy Patrick, and Rex Smith. And that is this week's Media Project.
Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. Like the richest girl who could not bake a cake. Ding-a-ling, ding-a-ling, ling-a-ling-a-ling. Now newspapermen are such interesting people. They used to work like hell just for romance. But finally, the movies notwithstanding, they all got tired of patches on their pants. They organized a union to get a living wage. They joined with other actors upon a living stage. Now newspapermen are such interesting people.
The Media Project is a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio. Alan Chartok is CEO of WAMC, Professor Emeritus at the State University of New York, commentator, columnist, and author. Rex Smith is editor of the Times Union. Judy Patrick is the Vice President for Editorial Development for the New York Press Association. And Ira Fussfeld is the publisher emeritus of the Daily Freeman. You can listen to or podcast the Media Project anytime at wamc.org or just download the WAMC app for your iPhone or Android at the Play Store today. Thanks for listening.
It's funny, Wall Street never has complained. Ah, but publishers have worries, for publishers must go to working folks for readers and to big shots for their dough. Now publishers are such interesting people. It could be prostitution, I don't know. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, circulation, ting-a-ling-a-ling, advertising, get those readers, get that payoff. What a headache, what a mess. Oh, publishers are such interesting people. Let's give three cheers for freedom of the press.